Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
We have a bit of a break from regular, quote, regular Rooster Teeth content, so we're going to catch up a bit with some of the biggest news in the world of Rooster Teeth. We're going to talk about Genlock, Achievement Hunter's hardcore tabletop, and as a look forward to Ruby Volume 6, we're going to be talking about the manga anthology volumes 1 and 2, as well as giving away Volume 3. Don't go anywhere, it's all happening right now on Rooster Teeth Reviews.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Welcome, everybody, in to Rooster Teeth Reviews right here as a part of AfterBuzz TV Animation. Tonight, we're catching up on some of our favorite happenings from the past couple of months. I'm joined by my fellow host, Megan Salinas.
Hey, everybody.
Stacey Shuttleworth.
Hello.
Katie Cullen.
Hi, all my buddies.
And I'm Mark B. Donica. We've been in hardcore series mode since RTX, and we haven't talked at all about some of the biggest news that has come since then and all of the various conventions here and there. So let's freak out about it now, shall we? Let's talk about some Genlock.
Yeah!
Just holy some general chicanery.
Genlock.
Oh my. We got a lot of casting announcements. Three of the three main ones that we got were, first, we got Game of Thrones star Maisie Williams playing Cammy McLeod, a mischievous Scottish hacker and the youngest recruit of the Genlock program. We have her character art right there as soon as we bring it up. Either way, we had a little bit of a preview of her in the trailer. Initially, I was really sad that we weren't going to get hardcore Scottish David Tennant. And then with the announcement of Maisie joining the cast and hearing a little bit of what her character has to offer, all of that went away. what do y'all think about this announcement?
Well, now we get hardcore Scottish Maisie Williams.
This
was absolutely wonderful, and I am beyond excited.
Hacker Arya Stark is something I never knew I always wanted.
I love her already.
Yeah.
It's hard not to.
I can imagine, even though I can imagine this being a bit more, maybe like a PG-13, not necessarily, I would love the hard R version of this character, personally.
Yeah.
Like
just,
or maybe to the point where she has her own censoring program, because when I think Scottish, I think cursing, and she seems just a little ornery already to be in the program. I'm beyond excited that she's involved. What a... Already, like, before this, we're like, Michael B. Jordan, that's me. David Tennant, what the hell are you... Blaine Gibson! But...
Miles Luna!
What the shit?
When I realized that this had really, really hit the big time was when I saw some of my friends on one of my social networks who knew nothing about Rooster Teeth talking about it. Talking about them getting David Tennant and Maisie Williams specifically. And then I kind of popped in with, yeah, they also have this person, and that person. And this is kind of how they got them. Like, here's all the info we have. And they're like, you knew about this? Yeah. I forget that this is a big thing outside of Rooster Teeth circles.
Wednesdays at 7 p.m. I have this. What are you talking about? But in researching all of the biggest headlines, I found one with Miles where he talked about the entire spec process was just, Michael B. Jordan, now, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then somebody went, why don't you just see if he wants to be involved? And he came back with, yeah.
Didn't they, like, have a wish list? And then casting got the wish list and went, okay.
And it did it.
Like,
magic.
Right.
And I also sort of imagine Michael B. Jordan just having a to-do list in terms of acting roles he wants. And, like, at the top of that list was star in my own mecha anime. And so he gets the call from Rooster Teeth and just goes, and check.
There we go.
Cancel all my appointments. I'm going to be in a giant robot boy show.
In chat, please clap says, in an interview, Gray said Cammy has by far the foulest mouth in the show.
Yes!
Grab the link for that interview and throw it in our hashtag, please. I'd love to see that.
It was probably the one with Geeks of Color. We reposted that when it was from New York Comic Con. So
okay.
Go ahead and check out our Geeks of Color, friend of the show, Belinda. Hope you're watching
and
listening.
They do good work,
they
and we Yeah.
Next star of the show. Go ahead and use that top one. Yep, that one. We have Asia Kate Dillon, who is voicing Valentina Val Romanizin, a former Ukrainian covert agent who thought they were done with fighting. Dillon's most known for their roles in Orange is the New Black and by being the first lead non-binary character in a lead role on the television show Billions. They're a wonderful actor. All of the press that they've done for Billions just brought them even higher on the map for me, and I... Even some of the little bit of Billions that I've seen, they're a great performer.
I can't say I'm familiar with any of their work, but I'm just it's a fantastic resume to be sure. But I'm also just looking at the character design and I'm like, I love this. Everything about this is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and just the little bit that we got in the trailer was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't get a lot for many of the characters in the most recent trailer, but the tiny little bits we got were just like, oh, yes, please, when's the full episode? When can I watch all of you for 22 minutes every Saturday? There's no way episodes are going to be 22 minutes long every Saturday, but
Katie,
I can dream.
That was the full episode. We already got it.
Oh, damn.
Surprise.
But what do you think, Stace?
Oh, man, I want the full episodes, too. All of it, just...
Well, I'm happy we, in terms of our next casting announcement, I'm super happy that we finally had an actress to put to Yaz, who's been sort of who was the second main character in the second pilot announced, and it's Golshifteh Farhani, who is in terms of Yaz, a talented and confident recruit from Iran who finds her calling in the Genlock program but won't open up easily about her past. Farhani, she's done a lot of work overseas. She's a musician, she's a singer, she's an actress. The only stuff that we would recognize her in, she was in Body of Lies with Leonardo DiCaprio. She was the witch in the most recent Pirates of the Caribbean that was friends with.
That was her.
Yes. She was the bald with all of the art.
Okay, yeah. She was friends with Barbossa.
Yes, friends with Barbossa, Exodus, Gods and Kings, and she was in 2014's Rosewater, which is just a landmark of a film. But the fact, just all of these... They're going as, I guess, quote, legit, as close to character description as possible. When it's like, no, let's have actors and actresses that can play whatever parts. Like, no, let's just get these people in.
I love the longer Rooster Teeth is around as a company, the more inclusive they get in terms of representation for people of color and for people across the spectrum. Like, I love that they reached out to a non-binary actor for Genlock, and I love that when they're casting people of color, they're like, hey, we should get people of color to do the voices.
We have an Iranian character. Let's get an Iranian actress.
That's so great.
Would you like to voice your animated double?
Yes.
Mm.
And so that's one of the most important priorities now to have, I think, as a company. So it's great to see it coming out of Rooster Teeth.
Yeah. It's so easy, and yet so few people do it.
Dear Hollywood, learn.
So I'm just so proud of our boys and girls at Rooster Teeth.
How
so
dare
great.
You, Cam Griffin. Soon we'll get Paul Rudd in Strangerhood 3. No
Given that Miles Luna described making Strangerhood 2 as reviving the desiccated corpse of Strangerhood, I don't think we're getting a 3.
Mark, what is your idea?
I can't say it.
You can?
No, I can't. I have to wait. Because I have to check and see if we can actually do it.
Oh, boy.
Keep us in
here
suspense.
We go.
This
is so exciting.
So here's an announcement. We're not doing Ruby. We're just going to go back and do Strangerhood. Even when Genlock starts, Strangerhood season 2.
We have priorities, too.
We do. And we have standards. And those standards are Strangerhood. Strangerhood.
Those are not high standards.
That's why I was doing this.
We went back in time and did Panic, so...
Goodness gracious. Man... Let's not talk about Strangerhood anymore. The only other pieces of news that we got about Genlock were that DC Entertainment is going to be publishing comics for both Ruby and Genlock. And because we're sort of littered with various Ruby-printed content, we've got this and we had the other manga that we reviewed last year already?
Yeah,
Earlier
we did
this year?
It was either right after the volume or right before the volume. Flip a dip, man.
Oh my goodness.
Regardless, I would like to say thank you to our friends at Viz who have provided several of these copies and the pre-release of the Blake volume for our giveaway, whose winner we will announce in a little bit.
And we're all going to turbo read before we send it off, but...
And I would, yeah, they've also confirmed that there's a new Ruby manga coming to Weekly Shonen Jump.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be authored by Bunta Kinami. It's coming to Shonen Jump later this year, and it is different from the manga that's going to be, from the comics that'll be at DC.
And from what I remember hearing at RTX, it's going to be kind of a retelling of the volumes that we've already seen in print form, and a little bit more of an elevated manga style, sort of like one of the action based ones in Volume One. But the fact that a female led show is going into Shonen Jump is a huge leap, and not since Maka and the
Soul Eater.
Yeah, where it's like boom, female protagonist right
also
on the front.
Also starring a girl with a sai.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is that
you have a main character with a scythe, and then you're in?
If that's all it takes to get a female-led story in Shonen Jump, guys, we got to start coming up with some pitches.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's a good point.
So who's Lord Death in Ruby?
Osben.
Fair. All right.
So we've
seen what we're going to talk a little bit more about Ruby offers in a manga sense. We know that we're getting them in Shonen Jump, but what do we get for Genlock from DC? So it's a completely different style than a manga style. The American action comic sort of a thing is different. Katie, do you have any ideas?
All I know is I want them to hire Gail Simone in some capacity to work on it.
Mm.
Just kind of peg that on the wish list.
I mean, it's been working out so far with Genlock. They can kind of go, whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
Can we just have everybody? Can you just put the likeness of Grant Gustin somewhere in there? Yeah. Like, sure, just on the wall. Like, Chase loves watching Flash or some, like, it's his favorite show from 40 years ago. But
yeah.
What's are we getting, like, common superhero? Is this a prequel? Is this a retelling? What we don't know the story.
I'd also love side stories.
Stories. Do you have any ideas, Stace?
Maybe. So it seems like Genlock is more based in the whole epic, world-clashing, big deal kind of heroics. Maybe something to show, like, what else is going on in this world. Maybe mm-hmm. more down-on-the-ground kind of stories.
Mm-hmm.
Did anybody ever read the Pacific Rim comics?
Yeah, Tales from Year Zero.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm sort of envisioning. I figure the main series is going to focus on that big world conflict, and that maybe the comics that we get from DC are going to be the origin of said war.
I would say the origins of the pilots.
Ooh,
and that's what I'm thinking is we get the origins of each of the pilots, and I would want a step further of it. Sort of acknowledging their background and being a little bit, each being a different sort of style that acknowledges the type of person that they are. Like with Val, we get a lot more blacks and a lot more inkiness and a lot more of a noir-y sort of vibe of her on some sort of a mission before they get the call to the Genlock program or something like that. But it
something that fits their characterization.
Exactly.
Yeah.
An art style that reflects the people that we will become familiar with when the show comes out, January
26,
2019.
Oh, we're so close!
We're so close. We're so far away, but we're so close. Like, we have a date. This is the Kingdom Hearts fan in me going, we have a date. We have a date. We have a date. Cling to it.
Cling to, yep.
It doesn't mean anything.
Oh, God, the Kingdom Hearts date is 3 days after the Genlock date. Guys, I'm going to die in January.
No.
A rough week.
The body
it's going to be a great week, but I will be a puddle on the floor.
You have enough time to not sleep or eat or drink or any of that to hopefully get at least 50% through the game. Hopefully. But then take your nap and then get through the next 50% and then watch Genlock on your break and then we go back from there.
I mean, my initial plan was to take a week off of work just to do Kingdom Hearts and then, well, plans change.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see.
I have a legitimate concern of the workforce the week that Kingdom Hearts comes out.
There's not going to be very many people at work.
I mean, people took off for Assassin's Creed. They took off for Black Ops. They took off for Smash. They're going to take off for Smash. Like,
this
come on.
This is huge. This is,
I know.
This is a several generations of people finally going, oh, that one game that I want is out. Servers are going to crash. Like, we're talking about this is the real Y2K. Y2 Kingdom Hearts. That's what was predicted by Nostradamus.
I've done my waiting, 13 years of it in the realm of darkness.
No one's going to get in my way. I'm going to kill him.
So, just since we're talking about video games, and we were talking about the Genlock comics, guys, we know that Rooster Teeth has done video game content for Ruby.
And there's more coming.
Are we going to get video games for Genlock where we get to play as fighting robots that fight each other?
You know what I really want in terms of Rooster Teeth games? I want a, like, Marvel versus Capcom style beat-em-up where you just, with all of their properties.
X-Ray, Vav, Mogar, Caboose, Andy.
Nomad.
Nomad. Just... That was,
everyone.
So now the one thing that I do remember from talking to it's just raining Edgars, hallelujah.
Yes!
But one of the things that I remember talking to Michael Hadwin from Rooster Teeth Games, which was a bald-faced lie, was that they were like Ruby Grim Eclipse was going to sort of take a backseat, and they were going to focus on some original content. And then the next year we found out there's going to be more Ruby Grim Eclipse content. So I have no idea what to expect from Rooster Teeth Games. Plans seem to change on what properties are hot. I don't think we would hear about an interactive for a while.
Oh, yeah, no. I think this is, like, way down the line.
Like, and licensing red versus blue characters is, as always, a nightmare.
Just do them in plain clothes, not in armor.
Yeah, but the helmets and then, like, the guns for hire outfits.
Something like, well, you can sneak by that with the...
Felix and...
Yes.
Yes.
The, why can I not think of their...
The mercs.
The mercs. We get our three favorite mercs, and we go from there. Hi, yeah. Stacey.
Hi.
But,
how you doing?
There's a lot of energy. I'm enjoying it.
But actually, dot gif.
We're going to sort of pivot here while we're talking about games. Today, this week, for some regions and some types of phones, and tomorrow and Friday, Ruby Amity Arena is going to be launching on mobile. And holy crap, is it a fun game? And I'm not just saying that because they gave me early access. But I legitimately find myself getting lost in it, losing track of the time, and getting, like, the notification, hey, by the way, your battery's about to die. You should probably plug that in. And it drained my battery, but I just lost track of time. So I highly recommend if anybody's... When I talked to them in the interviews on this channel, they said, we're going to try to get every Ruby character into this game. Everybody!
I'm going to play as the shopkeeper.
He's going to be in there, and he's probably going to be an epic drop. He's going to be a legendary character.
And everyone's going to go for it. Like,
yeah.
His special move is he clones himself and swarms the battlefield.
They have, so. Like, yes. Little Death Stalkers that spawn in packs of 12. That, oh, but no. Just shopkeep. And, give me back my diamonds, or whatever. Sorry.
Also, Death Stalkers that swarm in packs of 12 is just a nightmare.
That was my band name back in high school. But.
I was going to say, and also the name of my Flock of Seagulls cover band.
I was just thinking like how great it would be to play, you know, as characters that we haven't seen in the series for a while. Like Team Funky would be a lot of fun to play.
They just released a new neon tie-dye shirt in the store, and I was like, how would you do that? I know we're going to that area, but will we ever see the rest of Team Funky or any aspect of Team Funky?
Do they exist?
Are they still alive? Did they survive the snap?
What?
I mean,
oh no!
Hold on, this is getting a lot more complicated.
So the Reality Gauntlet affects multiverses,
yes.
And
no!
Take that and put that in your pipe.
That's why you haven't seen your favorite characters in Ruby this season.
Oh. They're all gonna die.
They turn to dust.
Explosive elemental stuff. We don't have the read in front of us, but hey, subscribe to our channel and subscribe to other channels and leave comments, and because it helps the producers know that these shows are popular and you want to keep us around. So please comment on all of the stuff that you deem worthy, all of the stuff that you enjoy. We've got Voltron on this channel, Attack on Titan, My Hero Academia is wrapping up pretty soon, and go back previous episodes. If you're joining us recently, go back, comment on previous episodes. I just went back to the first time we had Eddie on and responded to comments and doubt. Just because, whatever, we do that. Help support us by supporting the network that puts us on the air. Subscribe to us here. Subscribe to us everywhere. Thank you to AfterBuzz TV.
And you don't have to worry about notifications, but
We do recommend them because they tell you when we go live.
Yep.
There are lots of fun channels for all the types of genres that you like. Sci-fi, horror, those can be found on the same channel as like the superhero-oriented comment.
Professional wrestling.
Ooh.
I do.
Zombies.
What? Ooh. Is there AfterBuzz TV zombies?
Z Nation.
We're on the sci-fi.
Team. Oh, okay. Yeah, because it's AfterBuzz Wrestling and Sports.
You guys will see some familiar faces if you do.
It's them.
You already said it. Like, you buried the lead like 10 seconds before. Oh, all right.
Anyway, support everything.
So we were pivoting about Ruby, and now let's into one of our next discussion topics, the Ruby manga. This is a, and we've got all three here, including a special look at the Blake one that
look
is,
how pretty it
it's
is.
Taunting us now.
Thank you to our friends at Viz.
We love you. You collected a bunch of artists, a lot of varying styles in here, a lot of differing. Okay, let me just say, if you ship, I don't even know the ship name.
White Rose.
Right, if you ship White, thank you.
Love this.
I'm half proud, half disappointed. I'm proud disappointed. But if you ship White Rose, this is the volume for you. Oh my God.
Okay, yes. Holy
no,
daylight. It's not just me.
It's so heavy-handed.
Chunk of it in the Weiss manga too, but holy,
not as heavy,
nearly like that.
Oh yeah,
everybody's faces were red like roses when they were reading some of these chapters.
I don't know what they told the individual artists, you know, when they're like, oh yeah, you know, you've got free reign to do X, Y, and Z. I don't know what they told them, but it's amazing how an entire volume of artists working independently all went. And they all smiled and they all leaned into the exact same ship. How did that happen?
So, it's almost like it's a popular ship.
What?
All right, so Viz, you said that you're giving us X, Y, Z. Can we do three X's instead?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it still needs to CC be safe all. For work. And
CC all.
Please and thank you.
All right, so it's, I mean.
Melachroma says, Eastern Ruby fans really like White Rose if the pics of fan arts are any indication.
This is a family-friendly program. We're not talking, anyway. So, we're not going to break down each, we got two volumes to talk about. We're not going to break down each individual chapter, but I split it up like this. Which chapter in here, which story in here, did you think was closest to Ruby's character? Who wants to go first?
I thought that little interim we had with her and Weiss during that first mission, which explained how they got on the Nevermore in the show. Yeah. Like, I thought that little, God, what do they call those? They're not hidden moments. They're lost moments. I don't remember what the term is.
Interstitials?
Not quite.
That is Why anyway. I'm Here by Kuma.
Thank
is the one
you.
That you're referring to.
Yes, that I thought that one was very true to character. I like it when they fill in those little moments, hidden moments might be it, when they fill in those little moments that we don't get to see in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And that was done very well.
Yeah, I did think that one slotted really nicely in with where we would be in canon, too.
Yeah.
Cookies.
I was along with you. Chocolate Chip Cookies by Amayo seemed like the most... Ruby of a fun activity that to get all of the team together and consequently the one in the Weiss manga is very silly, but
I really also appreciate it because Ruby doesn't in the show proper, Ruby doesn't talk about her mom very often at all. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to sort of step into her mind a little bit where she just sort of thinks about her, and we don't get really any information that we didn't already have, but you know, for obviously her mom was a huge presence in her life who's now gone, and Ruby has to carry that grief around with her. But like, again, it's not really something she super acknowledges in the show itself, so it's nice to just step into her headspace as she's thinking of her mom for a little bit.
Agreed.
Yeah, without it being over, you know, overly melodramatic.
Yeah, and it was a nice fun moment with the team. What was everybody's favorite piece in general?
The Weiss cookies one.
I mean, per...
Oh, from that one.
Yeah, we're going per manga.
I mean, same.
Yeah,
Hidden Moments one.
Okay, the Nevermore. Okay.
Yeah.
Style-wise, the cookies one was my favorite. Sorry, how it was drawn.
It was so cute.
It was cute.
It was so cute.
I can't help but gravitate to the ones at the end of the book the No Doubt, which is just the weird.
Oh, they're just like tiny squares.
It's like it's four panels, four vertical panels, and they're so weird. They're just bizarre.
Welcome to the world of Four Coma.
But it's just it's deformed. It's great. It's and it's but you get exactly what the character is in those four panels, and even in single panels, you're like, yeah. Even just with Torchwick struggling to look Ruby in one, you're like, yeah, that's their relationship. Instantly. Yep. It's beautiful. Weird way to put it that way.
Probably. Cookies is high up there, but I also really like whenever Ruby decides, she's like, I'm going to fight Cardin. That sounds like a good time.
Yes. Yes.
The shippiest one of all, the just trying to help, is like, don't make fun of her scar again or I'll kill you.
Okay, Ruby.
Yeah, that oh boy.
Another one I really enjoyed was another kind of hidden moment one, I guess, with Ruby and Jean fighting.
Yeah.
And kind of just looking into their resolve. I thought that was a really nice, very in character kind of.
A lot of Cardin in these, in both volumes, just because that was the biggest villain we had in season one.
He's a toothless antagonist. You can kind of play with him on the soft skills side of things without having massive horrifying consequences.
Unless he launches someone out a window.
Which, I guess we'll talk about that a little bit. That was a thing.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead first.
I was just going to say, it's also nice just to see these additional interactions with Penny.
Mm-hmm.
It's always so nice.
One of my least favorite, which ended up, the result of which ended up being a little bit nicer than the entire point of it, was Ruby waking up and going, I want a boyfriend. I've been reading all these light novels. I want a boyfriend. The only thing that I think to come out of it, which probably isn't canon, is that Scarlett David's gay.
Yeah, that little scene with Team Sun was the best part of that whole
You guys are hot and useless, and my friends. Find me a boy.
Find me someone.
That one, more than anything, felt, I think, the most out of character for Ruby.
Yeah.
Because she just seems to have so little interest in dating.
Yeah.
Especially for such arbitrary reasons. But it did remind me a lot, that one in particular reminded me a lot of, did you guys ever watch the original Tenchi Muyo? Because there was an episode where several of the girls were introduced to shoujo comics, and then they spent the rest of the episode trying to artificially create shoujo meet cute scenarios
in a shoujo anime.
I mean, technically, it's a harem anime, so
that's true.
But I thought it was. That was before I knew what a harem anime was. So Tenchi Muyo is the only one that gets a pass.
Muyo is everyone's baby's first harem anime. Let's be real.
Innocently, I think everybody doesn't. They don't. At least from our generation, we don't like to call them harem anime. We're like, oh, you don't like Tenchi Muyo, because that's somehow more innocent.
And then you have this moment of, oh, Tenchi Muyo is a harem anime, and then you kind of recontextualize it with everything else you know about harem anime and go,
it changes things.
Damn it.
Before we move on, what was the from the Ruby manga, was there anything that anybody thought would be a great episode of Chibi?
The Beacon's Midnight Ghost Story. Nora covered in syrup.
I mean,
that's pretty straightforward.
Chibi's sort of already done it, but like the superhero suits.
Yeah. Yes. And there's X-ray glasses on Yang, which is a nice touch. Katie, do you have one?
I did just both of those, actually.
Mm. I thought Ruby wanting to grow her hair out longer and it being snakes.
Yes. That was also great.
That made Chibi sense. So let's move on to the Weiss manga. What were some of everybody's favorites here? Art style, most like the show, closest to Weiss?
Both for the Ruby and the Weiss manga, my favorite artist. Maybe it's a cop-out to say, but Mojo Joe. Mm-hmm. mostly because, you know, it's so good that they actually take that artwork and made it official in terms of doing the character designs for Chibi. So maybe it's, like I said, a little bit of a cop-out to say that their work is my favorite in both of these volumes. I just love her style so much. It's so pretty.
I particularly like the one where she was waiting for winter. Like, all right, I'm going to meet my sister. I put my hair up in a new style. It's just like hers. Oh, she's not coming. Oh, she is coming. I'm a little moments kind of person, you know?
Mine was another one with Winter, was the moon. That was my favorite art style and my favorite little story.
Yeah.
That was a really nice moment.
I was a big fan of The Princess, which is the first one that we got in the volume, because it sort of, it illuminated more of various character moments between, that is similarly, it fills in those blanks that we got from the last volume as well. Some of the styles in here are very, they're similar, but they tend to play a little bit more to the story. They tend to be a little bit more dramatic or a little bit softer or whatever. Snow White's Dream, reincorporating the short as a constant nightmare and something that she gets to work through with the team is a very... It's nice.
I think my favorite is Who is the Ice Queen Meeting? And, you know, it's basically taking that same premise of, oh, this person has a boyfriend, or, oh, this person wants a boyfriend. And it's twisting it in a way that doesn't completely change the character.
Yeah.
It's everybody else assuming, oh, she must be dating somebody. And that's because it's out of character for her to be going out at night this. So I much preferred that one if we're juxtapositioning it with the Ruby going, I want a boyfriend now.
Well, I think that the one to compare that to is the I want a better figure.
That bothered the hell out of me. Like, I got to that one and went, all right, someone has priorities.
They can't all be winners.
No, they can't. But I'd rather some of them be unwinners than straight up losers.
Same creator.
Aren't we surprised?
I went through to double check it.
10-1 odds. Well, there's a Blake story like that from the same creator. I haven't actually read the Blake manga yet, so because it's pre-release and shiny, and yay.
We have some time.
10-1 odds that there's a similar story from the same creator.
Also creeped out by when Mercury just showed up and danced with Ruby, but that's beside the point. We're past that one.
That was.
I really did enjoy the cookies one in the Weiss volume. That definitely feels like an episode of Chibi that I need in my life. Absolutely. That was hysterical.
An interstitial Chibi, and the only short... So I'm reading these in the middle of the night. It's like 1:32 in the morning. And there was only one panel that made me laugh out loud to a point where I thought we could get evicted. And it was Beacon Days. It's in the middle of the book. It's by Mojo Joge. And it's Hard Worker. And it's where Ruby catches her studying something. And the punchline is her holding a joke book.
Yes!
101 ways to crack up your friends. And I'm like, that is why. That's why she tries to hide. She's trying to be human. And she just can't. It's just a joke book. Whatever.
My mind immediately went to volume 2. And she's like, looks like the plans fell apart. And
everyone just kind of, no.
And, I mean, it's the volume 2 outfit, so it's like, this is just before that mission. Oh, God.
She was probably practicing that one.
Yeah.
She's like, I've been studying for this.
There might be a giant robot. Let's look up robot jokes. Don't be mechanical. Oh, that's a good one.
Goodness gracious.
Oh, wow. Yep. She's like, self-five.
Any final thoughts on the Weiss one?
I think thematically the Weiss one was really interesting because they did deal with a lot of very similar themes and very, very Weiss things that we've had to deal with over the past few volumes. Mm-hmm. And so just watching that struggle between opening up and, you know, accepting her friends and then seeing them constantly just push through the boundaries and ignore all of these walls anyways. Mm-hmm. Made for some fun stories.
Mm-hmm. I always appreciate... the thing about Weiss that I appreciate the most is her admiration for her older sister, but also this desire to be her own person. And break away from what her family wants her to be. And so kind of seeing her... Again, kind of go back to these early days of like still figuring that out and figuring out where she falls on that spectrum of wanting to be like her sister, but also wanting to be her own person. Those are always stories that sort of resonate with me.
Yeah, I liked the one where she stays home sick. And
that was a good one.
We get a glimpse of her at home with that, and you can it was subtle to where, dad doesn't have to stay home. But when Winter became that person that would stay home and stay with her, and then in the second visit where you see Winter coming back, you can see that sort of shift from, oh, Winter's the person that I really care about in the family.
And this was also before we knew that Mom was still alive and Whitley exists. Mm.
I mean, he's in, like, one of these.
He's in one of the panels.
He's just there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, featuring Whitley.
Is he playing Parcheesi with himself?
I mean, he's looking considerably less evil than the last time.
I mean, can
not
you ever,
a high bar.
Can you ever truly tell with Whitley? What a D-bag. When does the... Do you have the exact date of when the Blake one comes out? It's in November.
No.
Okay.
So, off the top of my head,
Volume 3 of the Viz Ruby anthology manga featuring Blake comes out in November. So make sure to pick it up. I would say, and not just because they're friends of the program, but I would say that these are essential reading when it comes to Ruby fandom. They're not that expensive. USA, $13, UK, 9p, and 18 bucks Canadian. It's not, I got off of Amazon $10. You know, it's great reading. There are going to be a couple of rough ones in there, but especially with Weiss, there's a lot of moments that I think help inform her character and the person that we see on screen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, not everything in an anthology is a winner, but these are more winner than anything else. Like, mm-hmm. I really appreciate these.
Again, if you like White Rose, the Ruby one.
Wow!
Even though we haven't read the Blake one, there's a great moment between Blake and Weiss in this one, and that was a little, I mean, I don't know.
It was a little odd, but like, but at the same time,
I can't believe how soft and warm your ears are.
It's just one of those moments of, all right, now we know what the writer is into.
Who wrote this?
It's like, is this a prelude to a much longer, lewder comic?
I mean, probably.
Thank you, Miraculous Corazon. November 20th is when that drops. Make sure to pick it up when you get there. Thanks to the fine folks at Viz, and...
But one fan's gonna get it early.
They're getting it early!
So, on Twitter, we asked you for your favorite Blake moments. We asked you to tell us what you love about our favorite Faunus, and we asked you to use the hashtag RTR giveaway, and we decided the result of the giveaway earlier, and by decided, I mean went as random as we possibly could. Cam Griffin, you are once again.
Well, Cam Griffin. See what happens when you're a dedicated listener, you get stuff.
And for those of you in the chat going, oh, I really want the Blake manga. Guys, we announced the contest last week. You had 7 calendar days to do it.
And if you do pick it up, let them know that the Rooster Team sent you there.
Absolutely.
Integration.
So yeah, Cam, DM me. We'll get this figured out. We'll throw it in the mail. Well, it'll happen.
But before we go, we're going to talk to you about High Stakes Monopoly.
Yes!
One of the biggest shows that debuted at RTX that we were real, real high on. We were talking about as we were walking away, the way that they teased us with not being able to see the second episode right away. Achievement Hunters Hardcore Tabletop. Indescribable. It's a game show, but it's gambling. It's like World Series of Poker, but with your friends. It's so bizarre.
It's Monopoly LARPing.
Malarpoly.
Yeah. But wouldn't it be like, if you go with the Monopoly naming conventions, wouldn't it be LARPopoly?
Well, sure. And I mean, Jeff technically did dress up as the Monopoly man with that stupid mustache, and God bless him for it. But for those of you who are unaware, it was Real Stakes Monopoly. They took the actual bank that Monopoly provides you and took that fake money and turned it into real money. $20,580 were on the table, and whoever won the game left with that amount of money. They started with $1,500. It was off to the races. And before we talk too much strategy, I just wanted to put a fun fact out there. Did you know that 7 is the most common number combination to land on a pair of dice?
I have literally never heard that before.
Ever?
Amazing. Have you never played craps?
Fun.
That's
facts.
What craps is built on.
Unbelievable.
We're here also, providing all of the facts.
Mark, even told you that? Where did you even hear that?
I picked it up from a friend. But
I love that they yes-anded the hell out of that.
By the end of it.
Oh, yeah.
So at the top of it, we got to see the first episode. So it was introduced to us, and then we got to see it. So we were lucky enough to sort of come in with an initial vibe. From the first episode, was there a player that you were pushing for, Katie?
I mean, Ryan. But just
it's always
fun to push for Ryan because he just doesn't do well. Mm. It's one of those ridiculous things. And I've been watching a lot of their Mario Party plays and realizing, oh yeah, no. In terms of playing large group games, I have a favorite because he just doesn't do well and I feel better about my life.
He said if luck was a factor, I'm going to lose. Like, he knows that if it's about luck, he just doesn't have it. Or he doesn't have it at board games, he has it at other places in his life. Who are you pulling for? Yeah.
I just think Alfredo's hilarious. So that's why I was in his corner from early on in the show.
Yeah.
For me, I kind of went back and forth a little bit. Like, you know, when somebody's going through some bad luck, I pull for the underdog. But then, and you know, I really loved, you know, when it looked like one person was on top, how everybody sort of came together to try to take that person down.
Just Jack.
But then when he started losing, I started pulling for him again. So I'm like, I'm very much like going with the narrative of the show. But for me, I always empathize with the person who's like, I don't have a plan. I don't know how this game works. I'm just doing things because I think it would be funny. And so Michael is who I was pulling for at first.
I thought you were going to say Jeremy.
I thought you were going to say Elise.
And she was my favorite part about
MVP.
The show.
MVP.
As not honestly. A troll in chat says, we're all always rooting for Elise.
Oh, like, she won the game without even being a player.
She's, anytime she shows up, well, she's does amazing work with Funhouse, but she is Achievement Hunter's favorite member of Funhouse to the point where they got her on an Achievement Hunter show and was like, whatever, we just want Elise. Everybody else can stay home. And my favorite moment of her, well, there's two favorite moments of mine with her. One where they're like, ah, can we get a ruling? What's the ruling? And she just wanders up and goes, what's going on?
That was the thing, is that, like, Jack, I think it was, expressed his concern that Lindsay, acting as the bailiff, was going to leave someone in jail and then wander off. And then fast forward to that moment, Elise was the one that wandered off and stopped paying attention.
But my second favorite was their favoritism of Alfredo. Just like, oh no, he let it go, he gets $200. He's like, all right.
You have to pass go.
You have to pass go. But a little sweetness over there. He gets $200. That's what it says right here. Sorry.
Elise and Lindsay Power Hour was my favorite.
They had a show, Lindsay had a show called The Chaos Corner that they were testing out. And one of the first episodes with Elise, highly recommended. It's on the Achievement Hunter channel. Go, please, for the love of God. Well, we've kind of determined that Ryan is the unluckiest player. Who does that leave for the luckiest player?
Alfredo.
I mean, he caught some crazy luck towards the end there.
I would also say, in terms of just how did you survive this long, Jeremy? Like,
Jeremy.
How?
Oh, that's right. I didn't mention Jeremy was the person after the first episode that I was pulling for.
Yeah.
Little Jay.
I have to concur
no
with
properties.
You. Yeah, that in terms of unlucky, I actually think he was unluckier than Ryan, even though Ryan was the first person out.
And his name was on more properties that he never got.
Yeah.
That garage.
That was the most landed on space.
Like, yeah. Frequently.
I didn't have to go back and rewatch the series because it was one or two times per episode, at least of the stuff that they showed us. Oh my God. But I'm going to beat you to it, not a roll. We're going to talk about jail and how effective jail was, how it became such a strategy at the end of the game. But before we do, I did a little bit of research and I just wanted to share with everybody. It turns out that the most common number combination on any given pair of dice is 7. I did that research all by myself. I just rolled a whole bunch. I've been rolling characters for D&D, and it's just I've been rolling pairs of dice, and it's I've been hitting 7 more frequently.
Why are you rolling pairs of D6s for characters in D&D?
The joke.
You roll 3, drop 1.
Specifically for the joke.
Mark, I will never let you get away with it.
You're a liar. There's no way that's true.
Well, we'll never figure it out. Time will tell.
Also, that means your highest stat would be 12, and your dump stats would be 2s, and that's like a negative.
Anyway, rules of comedy, we'll be back to that one in a second. But the jail became such a deciding I mean, I didn't play Monopoly that much as a kid, but I don't remember it becoming that important to a game.
None of us ever got that far.
No.
I don't think I've ever seen it in terms of like a game setup where people were actually going, send me to jail, send me to jail, send me
to jail. Roll for jail. That like boggled my mind.
Roll for jail. I'm like, I thought, what?
And the weird relationship that came from Alfredo being Michael's lawyer and vice versa. Just whatever, man.
What I love is that Monopoly way back when was originally created to be like, here are the evils of capitalism in a form that even children can understand. And of course, you know, the original creator got hosed and a half by Parker Brothers, and that's, you know, capitalism. I've never really realized how accurate that was until we watched this and saw late in the game, you want to keep your money? You go to jail and you run your enterprise from jail. Like, oh my God, they're in rich person jail. They get snacks. The bailiff is nice to them. Nothing matters.
I mean, it depends on who's in jail.
Again, rich person jail.
Societal jail. But it was interesting. It was the biggest strategy, I think, for Jack. Because he, when he would be let out, he would be in a at wide avenue full of all of his properties. He had no worries. But the times when a Michael or an Alfredo would roll a 10, or just like community chest or whatever it was, and get through it, we were yelling at our TV. It was ridiculous. I can say with all legitimacy that I said very passionately under my breath, come on, Sauce. Many times under my breath, because this show was so dynamic and added such a different thing to it. And we'll spoil it because F it. What the hell? Alfredo came out on top. He ended up winning $5,269.
Nice.
Dollars.
You were waiting for that, weren't you?
Yeah, well, I put it in the notes too.
We've been here before.
And we were just talking about shipping. But one of the things that I thought, if Jack was going to win, he was just going to say, I'm donating this to Extra Life. This is the first donation that I'm making to Extra Life. But they said, no, Rooster Teeth is going to make a donation on top of that in your name for a charity of your choice, which made that even sweeter, which is a nice thing. Alfredo gets a little bit of an extra payday, a bonus, and the charity gets a nice kick.
Yeah, that was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like 4 months' rent.
I mean, in Austin, it's
more
about
than
the same.
That.
Yeah, it's about the same as it is here. The last thing that we're going to do before we leave is really quickly round the table. What is the next hardcore game that we're getting?
Settlers of Catan.
No, let's play Life.
Okay. Oh God!
Oh God! And it's going to take 40 years.
Oh yeah!
Actually, driving cars around out in the lot, throwing people in and out.
Candyland.
Oh. And my answer: Shoots and Ladders. Yes. That's terrified, just gonna be. I mean, it's been all day, and we're going down another fucking slide.
A little play slide.
And it's just a big setup like Wipeout. But
it's vertical build.
It shoots in ladders, or maybe like a diagonal build.
God bless America. I want all of these.
That's what we have. That's all we have time for. Next week is going to be a special presentation. It's going to be Halloween, so we're going to be talking all about Bloodfest. So make sure to pick it up. We're going to be talking all about it right here on Rooster Teeth Reviews. But before we go, Katie, where can the folks find you?
You can follow me all over the social medias as well as on YouTube and Twitch at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. If you like reaction videos to Rooster Teeth content, they live on that YouTube channel. Also, we're doing a special episode of Voltron literally right after this, so stick around.
Stacey.
Hey guys, I'm Stacey Shuttles. You can find me all over the web at Stacey Shuttles. You can also find me over at twitch.tv at InventoryFullPT. Yep. We have a lot of really exciting things to stream. There are a lot of games coming out. If you like My Hero, One's Justice comes out at the end of this week, and we're going to be playing a lot of that.
Yeah, we're
going to
be doing a big marathon on Friday.
That sounds awesome. I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at The Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N.
That was a lot quicker than I expected.
She has a podcast called No Love Lost.
Yeah. So, something that you can follow me at Mark Budonica. Party of Two is a theme park podcast that my wife and I do. We did a great episode this past Tuesday where we talked about Halloween attractions that don't have Halloween overlays that deserve them. There's a really obvious answer that I didn't. I'm so surprised they haven't done it yet. You can follow all of us here. You can follow us at The Rooster Team, tpublic.com/TheRoosterTeam. And before we go, something I realized is that, did you know that the most common roll on a pair of dice is 7? That's all that we have time for. We'll see you next week.
Oh.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.